Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, it's time to Fast Forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Presented by Oricon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy Thursday, the Thursday show. Commerce, community, the future of almost everything. Martin Moore joins us in studio. So, Martin, I got to ask, you seemed a little disheveled on social this week, and you had some challenges with Siri. Are you okay?
No.
Is everything all right?
No, I hate her. Ugh, I hate. She's my least favorite person on planet Earth.
How does Apple fix Siri? What do you want to see changed in the system?
I mean, they have yet to implement their Apple Intelligence with Siri, which I still don't think is going to do a lot. I think the crux of everyone's issue with Siri that we sort of forget is that Apple's entire business model is predicated on privacy. And so there's only so much you can do on device to get things to work correctly. That's why Google works so well and Alexa works so well, because your data's not private. You got people listening, they're storing it and all that stuff. And then they can do a lot more to help you out in ways that Siri just can't. And so I don't know how Apple ever really gets over that. But boy, she was really frustrating me yesterday.
Hopefully they continue to innovate from within with their AI.
And it's not like I was trying to ask her to start the microwave and lock my door. I literally asked her to set a timer and she couldn't do it.
I just wanted to make sure you're all right. Yeah. Today on the show, we're going to tackle Target, Netflix, and news. Is the future of the kids menu adults? You need a new pillow. Where do you go to buy one, and how do I find the right reviews? And at the end of the show, we're going to give you a little preview of Food and Froth this weekend at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We'll tell you all about it. But as we do each and every morning, let's go to Up.
Now it's time for the
Two
Up on the Upswing.
Speaking of Apple, new to you, following quickly on the heels of the new iPad Air release on Tuesday. Yesterday, Apple rolled out updated versions of its MacBook Air laptops and its Mac Studio desktops. Both have that AI-enhanced M4 processor. The Mac Studio is also available with an older M3 Ultra chip, which is actually a little bit stronger. The Mac line saw a big rebound in holiday sales. It's helping to offset slower demand for the iPhone. I'm a MacBook Air guy, Martin. The new models are going to be 13 inches and 15 inches, starting at $999
great up
price to $1,199. It's actually $100 less than the M3 version.
When does Apple hardly ever do that?
Wow.
I cannot recommend the MacBook Air enough. It's the greatest laptop ever made.
It's treated me really well, and they now offer this really cool sky blue color. Mm-hmm. So take a look.
That shouldn't collect any fingerprints whatsoever.
No, but it's going to look great. Number two, ADP says jobs are down. Companies hired less than half the employees forecasted for February. Among tariff concerns and more, ADP reported these numbers yesterday. Payrolls processor said Wednesday that 77,000 workers were added last month, and that was down from 186,000 in January and the slowest pace since last July. Private firms in trade and transportation and utility industries lost 33,000 jobs. The United States releases its non-farm payrolls report for February tomorrow. When we come back, we'll look at the future of Target. Can Target get its Target magic back? This is the future of almost everything. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Martin Moore. You are listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. Martin, Target used to have this whole magic around it. Everyone referred to Target as Target, right? It was the place to go, innovative products, just wonderful stores, had this like happiness and bounce to it. Yesterday, in an investor meeting in New York City, Target said that it plans three different things to kind of get the company back on its feet. Plans to double down on its third-party marketplace, its media network, and then go really hard on same-day delivery services to drive more than $15 billion in revenue over the next 5 years. And this all comes today that Target's facing a 40-day consumer boycott after rolling back some of its DEI initiatives. So there's a lot of Target kind of plays in this middle space in the retail and the digital world. What are your thoughts on how Target can continue to grow?
I definitely think leaning into their online store will be financially advantageous for them. Target's one of those rare and few retail stores that I will go to their website to buy something if I can get it there. Kind of similar to like Walmart. Mm-hmm. And a lot of brands are not fortunate to sort of have such a robust customer base that they won't just immediately go to Amazon. They'll go, well, let me check target.com real quick and order. And so I think leaning into that and competing with Amazon and making, you know, same day delivery or they have their pickup, a high priority and advertising that and letting people know that they can get their stuff same day, I think it'll be huge. Retail is continuing to suffer all around, you know, at least the United States. And so they're going to have to get creative, maybe shrink the footprints a little bit.
Yeah.
Go through everything, see what they're not selling, get rid of certain things that people just aren't buying anymore in store. And
yeah, really look to match that in-store experience to the digital experience because the two really have to play well together. And yesterday, the CEO also said it's going to, you know, not only kind of leaning into getting back to Target and its magic, the company wants to do just that. In-store experiences need to be better. It wants to introduce new and exciting products and invest in its supply chain to make everything more efficient. I mean, already, you know, in some of the stores, but online, they have Peloton, they have Daily Harvest, they have the Honest Baby clothing. So that's all on their platform, but they always don't sell those same products in the store. So it creates a little bit of a disconnect.
Sure. And when you sell it in store, then you're talking about inventory management and that overhead and cost is a lot, especially when you're something like Target, where you sell myriad different things, everything from diapers to food to shoes to laptops and TVs, and so it can get expensive having all that inventory. And so you can see why some stuff they may just sell online and not in store. And so it's a pickle. I think inventory is another big thing that they have to look at because there's a lot of stuff that sits on those shelves for a long time, collecting dust.
And as you know well, I mean, all companies are media companies in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
And Target wants to double the size of its in-house media company, which is called Roundel, by 2030. The company said that unit already drove more than $2 billion in value last year.
And that's their marketing?
That's their marketing digital media arm. So if you're selling on its third-party marketplace, you're able to use Roundel as your media buying agent to get additional exposure to sell your products, much like Amazon does.
Sure, sure. And, you know, I think that's a nice little byproduct that they can take advantage of their business model. But they sell products. They have a storefront. They're brick and mortar, and that's going to be the main focus. Unless they're interested in going extinct in the retail space and leaning into the digital, but they really have to focus on that brick and mortar retail. I think if they want to survive, which I think they will.
Here's my quick three ideas for Target. If you're listening, I mean, and you should be. You got to embrace the quirkiness, and you really have to look into the customer's box. Right, part of that Target magic was being playful and bringing back a little bit of that sense of humor, I think, through marketing and product design. You can creatively support DEI through products and design and just be you a little bit more. I think Target's got away from that. And then, as we were just talking about, the digital integration, I think, is key. Everyone wants that omni-channel experience and augmented reality within the app. I mean, Target is college dorm room central,
mm-hmm.
but college kids buy differently. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not just going to go to the site and buy something. They want to see what it looks like, how it frames in their room. So they don't have that piece
sure.
that you know, some of the bigger furniture outlets do.
Yep.
So look at that. And then it's all about the experiences. Let's look at curated experiences, even for the basics. You kind of bring back that cheap chic vibe. Curated collections, interesting partnerships, work with designers and artists. They used to do a ton of that with those kind of limited edition drops.
Sure.
That creates a big buzz. So get back to what you were doing and do it well and just know who you are. That's what it's all about in the retail game. This is The Upswing. We are looking at the future of almost everything. As I look at menus, I wonder, Martin, is the future of the kids' menu adults? We'll do that when we come back. I wish that I could be like the cool kids, because all the cool kids, they seem to fit in. I wish that I could be like the cool kids. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. So, Martin, I saw this stat the other day. In 2024, adults ordered 28% more kids' meals than they did going back to 2019. This is according to research firm Circana. And the shift is kind of coming, obviously. You have inflation, you have increased food costs, and so consumers are, you know, they're weighing on their budget a little bit when they're out and about. Do you, no matter where you are, let's say you're going through a drive-thru or you're just out with your wife, can us, as wonderful diners in the adult age, order from the kids' menu?
Can we?
Can we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Should we?
My wife orders the kit from the kids' menu at Culver's.
All right. And there's no problem with it in terms of, wow, I'm hurting the profit margin of the company.
No.
Or the menu intent is for kids only.
No.
Or like some kind of social norm of embarrassment.
No.
None of that?
Here's the thing with adults ordering from the kids menu, and I'll tell you why my wife does it. And I'm not going to say that why my wife does it scales to why every other adult human does it. But one of the big reasons is portion sizes in the United States. You go to any other country and their portions are a fraction of what we have here. And with this country becoming more health conscious, a lot of people will go to a restaurant and they don't need this giant burger with this massive plate of fries and all these sides. They just want something that's going to fill them up. And they don't want to pay for a bunch of food that they're not going to inevitably eat.
Yeah.
And so a kid's menu makes sense because it's cheaper. It's a more realistic portion of food if you're health conscious. You know, we've all been to a restaurant and they're like, you know, you want fries, you want tots, you order the fries and they bring out this basket. And so I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of adults, or two reasons why a lot of adults, order from the kids' menu.
Yeah.
Smaller portion sizes, and then it's cheaper and they're not wasting money on food that just goes in the garbage.
Yeah, I saw something yesterday that McDonald's is selling a whole lot more kids' meals to adults because it's just that. The portion sizes are a little smaller. Yes. There's some cost savings there,
sure.
But you know, there's really nothing wrong with it. And that's how I look at it, especially things like ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Like you go and you get a single scoop of ice cream.
It's huge.
Place. It's
the size
way
of a
too much. It's way more than I want. So I'll always say, is it legal for me to order a kid's scoop?
Is it legal?
And then it just, you know, because sometimes, as producer Jaslyn just said, like sometimes the wait staff or people working at the restaurant, they may not be ready for this big conversation about, hey, can we do this? Is it legal? I don't know. But I always just lighten the mood a little bit and
sure.
say, you know, I don't want to eat all that. I'd like to order sure. the kid's burger, not only because it's only $5, but it's just not huge.
Exactly.
And that's all I'm hungry for.
They either want your money or they don't.
Yes.
You know, but that's sort of where I stand on it. I would prefer smaller portion sizes. I don't eat all of my meals. And so it's just like, I'm going to leave half a burger. I'm going to leave half the fries that I paid for. It's a waste.
Yeah.
Waste of food. It's a waste of money.
Indeed. Yes. I mean, looking at that, do you have any favorite? This is always my challenge. If I need a quick lunch, I challenge myself to find a lunch for $5. Can you find a $5 lunch anywhere?
Can you find a $5 lunch?
Yes.
Yes.
Where
will
you go?
Suffer what? The repercussions of that $5 lunch 12 to 24 hours later? That's debatable.
But if you get really creative, that's how you do it. You order off the kids' menu. If I'm going out to the Third Street Market Hall here to Dairyland, sure. I can buy the $5 kids' burger
sure.
and be all right with it. And it's not huge. It's going to get me through the day.
Yep.
And I feel like, all right, I didn't buy the huge adult burger.
Exactly.
And it's a good
you still feel
lunch.
Like you could go for a run afterwards or play some pickleball. You don't feel like you need to just pass out on the couch and in a massive calorie hole.
And another thing, the salad bars at your local grocery store.
Love me a salad bar.
Super affordable.
Yes.
You can curate it as you want. And you can get out of there in like $4 or $5 with a really healthy meal. Mm. So finding those $5 lunches, I think, is something that we should all challenge ourselves with, not only for portion control, but to keep the family budget in line, especially in these times of higher costs.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, John.
All right. There we go. That is the upswing advice for the day. Coming up next, we have Get Ready. Mineshaft giveaway. Speaking of kids' menu, the kids' menu at Mineshaft, always super affordable, a ton of fun. Obviously today, which is Thursdays, you buy one pizza, you get a second pizza for free at the Mineshaft. We'll do the Mineshaft giveaway when we come back. And then Netflix and chill. Should Netflix add news? A really interesting debate that I'm sure the company's having on how you power continued engagement on that platform. Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. It's the future of almost everything. We can't get to everything, so we get to almost everything on the Thursday shows with Martin Moore from Cost, content creator, technology expert, and so much more.
Puppeteer, ventriloquist, trapeze artist.
Oh, and passionate Bucks fan, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Good win last night. I like the Bucks are playing really well. It's good to see.
The bench has looked outstanding since the last trade deadline that we had. And I'll tell you what, I love Chris Middleton, but I don't miss him. We are stacked now, and we are just running through teams.
I think they can catch the Knicks.
The Knicks is going to be our biggest
thing.
One.
Yeah. Everyone
says
three
the
games,
Cavaliers.
Three, 4 games, but I think they can catch them.
If we can get past the Knicks, we have a shot this season, in my opinion.
Yes. All right. Always, always a shot. YouTube and Netflix are the current TV leaders, if you will, right now, right? They're both huge, huge audiences, major growth for both last year. Kind of little different businesses, of course. YouTube, you look at the total revenue of YouTube, they're over like $50 billion, a lot of user-generated content, but yes, a lot of original stuff. Netflix at about $40 billion. They're both looking for more ways to be more engaging. And I would argue that right now, YouTube has that, all right, I must go on a daily basis because the content is always changing.
And that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. And Netflix on the other side, just you kind of use it when you're in the mood.
Yeah.
How does Netflix create that daily access and a deeper sense of urgency?
Sure. I think there's a couple things. One of them is obviously sports. That's a huge one. We saw how many users came to watch, the Jake Paul Tyson fight, some Thursday night NFL games. If they can strike a deal with the NBA or the MLB or NFL to try and get more games on there, sports would be a huge addition.
Yeah.
News could be another one. But what Netflix really needs and where their biggest issue going forward lies when competing with something like YouTube is that, like you said, that user-generated content. Most of what's on YouTube, 95%, is user-generated content. And so you're constantly logging on to see new videos of whatever it is, if it's cats playing or if it's me and Jen love watching like art tours of new RVs. We watch this Matt's RV thing. And so what Netflix doesn't have is just that constant stream of new content. Everything that they do, they have to buy. Whereas YouTube, they're just paying creators ad revenue. Right. The creators are making things. So look at something like First We Feast, with Sean Evans, where they do the interviews where they eat the hot wings. Mm. That show ended up getting bought out, but that used to be a YouTube channel show. And so that I think if Netflix can create some sort of segment where they have user-generated content, I think that could go a long, long way.
Yeah, and it, you know, Netflix kind of misses that surprise and delight mm-hmm. that you get with YouTube.
Sure.
What do you think about this? And I 100% agree on news. I think they're going to get into news in some way, shape, or form. But I think there is a way to kind of walk before you run there. Local weather. You could geo-target to cities, have all the data. You could have unique hosts. Forecasts, weather works on so many levels, right? It affects everyone. And I think it'd be a soft way to launch into whatever the Netflix news network and just provide a really compelling, unique, personality-driven weather report. Sure, you're going to get your weather at a lot of places, like right here, sure. WTMJ. But weather has that insatiable demand.
Okay, so one, I'm going to disagree.
All right, I'm good. I like
because
that.
Because you can get, there's so many places you can get the weather. I think people are locked into where they're going to get it.
Yeah, but I'm going to use seven different places if it's a show.
Sure, that's true. That's true. But as you were saying that in real time, my brain was going. And I, and going back to the sports thing, I honestly think just creating a show that has sports pundits that talk about after games, strike a deal so they can use footage with MLB, NFL, blah, blah, blah. But have an actual show where they talk about highlights and players and just talk all things sports, necessarily don't actually show the games because you got to pay big money for that. But to have a show, you know, to have a Shannon, get a Shannon Sharp on there or a any of these people, Rich Isaacson, get any of those guys on there and strike a deal and have some sort of reoccurring sports show, I think could be huge. Yeah.
Well, ESPN did get rid of Around the Horn, or they're about to.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
So if you can gobble up one of those and get people to come back and see, because for me, trying to watch reactions of Bucks games from pundits is pretty far and few between. Nobody talks about it. And so just having access to another station other than ESPN or TNT would be, I think, very financially advantageous for Netflix.
Media today is a conversation, not a sermon, and that continues to evolve, but it's all about engagement. It'll be interesting to see what Netflix does next. Speaking of next, I need a new pillow. Where do I go to get the right information, and how much should it cost? This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Let's give away a gift card to the Mineshaft Restaurant in either beautiful downtown Hartford or just off of Highway 41 near the EAA in Oshkosh. Always super affordable, ton of fun, really family friendly. That world-class game room, quietly, conveniently set aside from the dining areas, making it perfect for mom and dad to hang out downstairs at the bar. Maybe you can go up and challenge your kid to a video game or two. I like to do Papa Shot because I always win. But kids under five, they eat for free Monday through Thursday from the kids menu. Every Thursday when you buy one pizza, you get a second pizza for free at the Mineshaft. Caller number seven at 855-616-1620 gets a gift card to the historic Mineshaft. Martin, I want to continue our Netflix conversation, because I think it's just really, really interesting to consider what's next for the company. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they want to continue to spur engagement. They want to continue to drive profit, create more opportunities for higher subscription fees. But would adding news or even weather, would that take away from its core mission? And would it create too much confusion in the user's mind?
I don't think so, because you know users are used to something like Amazon Prime or something that's maybe a better example would be something that's like slightly more content fragmented, which would be like YouTube. Users are used to that. And, you know, when you are looking to compete with your biggest competitor, which YouTube is probably Netflix's, in my opinion, biggest competitor, you know, you have to start to lean into the things that your competitors are doing well and winning at. Very similar to like when Instagram started doing Reels and copying Snapchat stories, or when Instagram introduced Threads to compete with Twitter. And so I think that's the sort of thing that Netflix has to do to compete with YouTube, or otherwise they're going to continue to fall behind as brands like Paramount and all these others pull their content and their content pool starts shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. They're only going to be left with their own content, as YouTube is just constantly growing. Not only is YouTube's content just always there. But, you know, they have new content that just builds on. And so the compounding interest of the shows and minutes and hours you can watch on YouTube just far exceeds anything Netflix will ever be able to do. And in order to replicate that and compete with that, they have to take a page out of YouTube's book. And so I think, weather, sports, news, all of that stuff is going to help buff.
Leverage that data, make it stickier, as we say in the media business, and create more sense of urgency. And I think you do that with news and weather. It'll be interesting to see when that happens. All right, I need a new pillow, a little pillow talk, if I may.
Ooh,
here,
pillow
Martin.
Talk.
No, come on. Where do you go? Like, how do I get the proper research if I want to buy a pillow? You can't just go buy one willy-nilly off of Amazon. Sure, I can read the reviews, but what should a pillow cost, and where do I get proper data for pillows?
Let me confess something to you, Jeff. I'm still, at 44 years old, on the hunt for the perfect pillow.
Okay.
I don't think it exists. Unless the listeners have one that they recommend, which everybody has a pillow that they recommend. I have yet to find the perfect pillow. What you pay for it? I don't know. What would you pay for a pillow?
I mean, I'm thinking...
I'd pay $1 million for like one that lasts forever and like... Yeah. I sleep good at night and doesn't kill
my
neck.
I've had a few people recommend Wirecutter.com, that's owned by the New York Times, for its kind of curated professional reviews, and they actually test a ton of them. So you're looking at maybe some of their Tempur-Pedic pillows.
Sure.
High name, maybe a little higher end, $66 to $90. So I don't know. I guess I'm willing to spend up to $100
on a pillow. Can I ask you a personal question?
Oh, of course.
You feather guy or foam guy?
Oh, I'm going the memory foam.
Memory foam.
Yeah, but I want it to be good. I want to know that memory foam doesn't have bad stuff in it.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do.
Bad stuff gives you cancer, bad stuff.
Exactly, right. And that's hard to find.
Yeah.
All right. Many people chiming in on pillows. We're going to save that topic maybe for the next time, because there's a lot more to say there. But Wirecutter.com, that's my recommendation. Coming up next, we're going to give you all the details about Food and Froth, the 25th annual Food and Froth. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing on Saturday night. The beautiful Milwaukee Public Museum right here in downtown Milwaukee. The annual Food and Froth event. Madeline Anderson is the Director of Communications at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Madeline joins us. Thanks for your time this morning.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So Food and Froth, it's one of my favorite events. This is the 25th annual. I just love the fact that you can walk through the entire museum, enjoy friendship, and, you know, kind of what Milwaukee was built on, beer, right? So tell us all about it and who's involved this year.
Yeah, it's a great event. We do it every year, as you said, for the past 25 years, where, you know, we open up the museum after hours to the 21 and plus crowd, and people can explore three floors of exhibits while also sampling beer throughout the exhibit floors. And then, you know, we don't want anyone to drink on an empty stomach, so we also have dozens of food vendors set up as well. So I think in total we have 80 vendors between beer vendors and food vendors that are going to be set up throughout the museum.
Wow. And so it's one cost and registration that gets you access to what then?
Yep. Yeah, it's really easy. The ticket gets you access to the museum, so you can experience, you know, the entire museum. And then it also includes, you know, unlimited food and drink. And we also are going to have live entertainment. We have a couple live bands. So it's a really fun event. And, you know, I just love seeing people come and, you know, let loose, kind of break the rules, right? We typically don't allow... we typically don't allow food and beverage on the exhibit floors, but, you know, this is your opportunity to break that rule.
So we can take selfies with the woolly mammoths and...
Exactly.
and the granny at the streets of old Milwaukee.
Exactly. You can take selfies, you know, and typically you can't cheers, you know, while you're doing that. But on Saturday night, you'll be able to take a selfie with your little glass, your little commemorative glass in hand, cheersing.
Very good. And so this will be the second to last event at the current facility, correct?
You know, nothing is set in stone, but I believe that is the plan, yes.
Okay, all right. And then, you know, depending upon what happens with the Streets of Old Milwaukee, if it moves in its entirety to the new venue,
yes,
I'm sure the event will continue in the new venue, correct?
Yeah, we haven't discussed future fundraising events, future programming yet for the future museum, so I can't guarantee anything, but, you know, history has shown the community, vendors, the public, they love this event. So I think in some capacity, we will probably do something similar in our new museum. And we do have a, I have to mention, we will have a gallery, an exhibit gallery full of Milwaukee artifacts and history in the new museum called Milwaukee Revealed, which will be very similar feel and concept to Streets of Old Milwaukee.
Very good. Food and Frost, Saturday night, 7 to 9:30 p.m., correct?
Yep, that's for general admission, but you can go VIP and come an hour earlier from 6 to 10 p.m.
All
Lots
right.
Lots of options.
Madeline Anderson, Director of Communications at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Madeline, thanks for your time this morning. All the best with the event on Saturday.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
These are your business headlines from the Milwaukee Business Journal.
A new racket sport is coming to Milwaukee. The first facility for paddle, a sport invented in Mexico that's huge in Latin America, is on its way here. An entrepreneur is looking to open up Paddle MKE on the south side with three courts and a 20,000 square foot space. Longtime Milwaukee Bank CEO Mike Mahoney has passed away. Mahoney was CEO of Park Bank, and he also had a huge impact on the city's nonprofits. This included serving on the board of the Milwaukee Art Museum and helping to raise funds for the Quadracci Pavilion. One of the area's largest investment firms will soon have new leadership. Artisan Partners has named Jason Gottlieb as its new CEO. He'll replace Eric Coulson as leader of the firm in June. The publicly traded company has $168 billion in assets under management. I'm Timothy Gibbons with MilwaukeeBusinessJournal.com on 620 WTMJ.